Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists in a Microphone. My name is Mark. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We got a real cool guest sitting on the other side of our Zoom. Amanda's sitting on the couch. I'm in the Captain Kirk chair. Let's get this going.
Let's do it. It's another Monday recording. I don't know. We're on fire.
I think for the rest of this recording, you guys have to refer to me as James Tiberius Kirk. How about that?
I can do that. Yeah. I can do that. I mean, it's going to be hard since I've known you for a long time at not as James Tiberius Kirk, but I will do my absolute best,
like
Captain.
That he's Tiberius.
Hey everyone, it's Amanda and it's Monday afternoon and we've got Simone on Zoom with us, and Simone is here to talk about all the cool stuff that she does. Before we jumped on the recording, go ahead.
You notice in that show, McCoy always refers to him as Jim.
Of course I don't notice.
I don't watch
that show.
Majority of the time refers to him as Captain.
Simone, do you know what he's talking about?
I do. And can I be referred to as Spock during this episode?
Absolutely.
All right,
sure.
Great. Then who the heck am I?
Only if you bleed green.
Well, now that I know that I'm sitting with two nerds today, let's get this going.
Why does Star Trek make you a nerd?
I don't know. I know nothing about Star Trek. It could be actually very, very cool, but it's one of those things that are just associated with nerds. But remember that nerds are cool. It is like really cool to be nerdy right now.
Is it?
Isn't it?
It used to be.
I think it's
well, actually, so too with Star Trek, it's kind of like predictive media with the little beam me up things. Those were cell phones.
Yeah.
And yeah, just
Gene Roddenberry was on to something.
Yeah, totally.
Yes.
Maybe he was an alien.
Maybe. They're here. Aliens are here. Well, we've got Simone here who may or may not be an alien. And before we jumped on the mic, she was her and I were trying to come up with like her title, because Simone has a lot of experience. She has a background in psychology. She is a fascial expert. She's a manual therapist. So she teaches and does public speaking about fascia and brain health related to concussions and ADHD. And she's recently been breaking into the massage therapy world because she thinks a lot of what she speaks on and what she teaches could be very useful to our world. So we've actually invited Simone to be one of the speakers at the Calgary CMC happening in June 2024, where she's going to talk about lymph and fascia and concussions. So I don't know what we're going to talk about today, but it's all those things and maybe more. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. How are you feeling about this, Captain?
I feel good about this. It's a weird question. I don't know.
I just really wanted to refer to you as the Captain. I'm going to throw it over to Spock to introduce herself. You go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Great to see you guys. Thank you for having me on your program. And so why I chose Spock is Spock is really logical and looking at sort of really objectively how things are happening. And I think that kind of segues into really what fascia does too. It's really looking at the connection and the overall view of health. So I consider myself a pain management expert. I'm really looking at how fascia influences pain, but also how it influences concussion recovery. So the treatment and the program that I did for massage therapists and osteos, all looking at the manual technique of how to create space in the brain fascially to reduce symptoms of concussion. So that's really my passion and looking at how that connects.
Very cool. Well, let's start at the beginning, Simone. How did you get into this field? Was this like your lifelong dream to work with brain health and fascia, or did you stumble into this? And if you did, what were you doing before? What did you set out to do with your life?
Well, that's a really great question, because I stumbled into this. I actually went to university for a law degree. So I did pre-law, and which really helped me in business. But in my third year, I was, going along, and I had a car accident. So the car accident really created a lot of pain for me. I started getting migraines. I never had migraines before. And I went to Cairo. I did massage therapy. I always did self-care ever since I was 16 years old, because I had a lot of sports injuries. So I was really honored actually to have access to that information. And during that time too, I interviewed like 10 different criminal lawyers, because I was really interested in being a criminal lawyer. And they all looked at least 20 years older than they were. And they all said I was too idealistic, that I would not end up helping people. So segue, I have this car accident, get all these treatments, but I'm still in a lot of pain. So one of my mom's colleagues said she referred me to this physical therapist who had trained in England. And he really was semi-retired, didn't take people, but he took me. And that was kind of like my segue into manual therapy. He's like, wow, this is an interesting way of helping people. And he was a healer. He also got me out of pain. And I talked to him about that too, because he was sort of mentoring me. And he's like, well, he goes, you'll always need, he goes, because of the way my brain is, he's like, you'll always need more mental stimulation than doing what I'm doing. And I'm like, wow, I think what you're doing is pretty honorable and you're taking away pain in people. But he said, and so I was like, I kind of thought about that. Now I'm looking back and he's right in the sense that I was always creating pioneering treatments. I created the manual treatment for concussion. So it was like, he was kind of being predictive, just like Star Trek.
I want to back this up. I want to back this up before it escapes me. What were you told by a criminal lawyer that made you say, like, this is not for you? Can you play that back for me? I want to make sure.
She's too idealistic.
You're too idealistic. Tell me what you mean by that.
What he said is that I'll end up defending, if I wanted to make money, I'll end up defending those that I really don't want to. Because my going into being a defense lawyer was like being an advocate, let's say, for child abuse or animal abuse or being kind of like the spokesperson for that. But he said, there's really no money in doing that. And I would end up being pretty much like them and really not happy.
Interesting. So, but when it comes down to the whole idea of being idealistic, then is the implication that being a criminal defense lawyer and giving someone the right to defend themselves, there's a certain weird ethical line that's being crossed? Like, I kind of want to understand that a little bit better.
So I think it wasn't that, because of course I'm assuming these guys did the best job that they possibly could. But I think my approach, and just in the conversations that they had with me, because these were all different lawyers.
Right.
And I think they just thought maybe I would be better suited somewhere else, which is interesting because I am an advocate online and with donating to causes for kids and animals. So I'm doing it a different way. But yeah, I think these people, everyone deserves a defense. Mm-hmm. But I think what they were looking at is, would that wear me down? Mm. And make me be less of who I am, because life does do that anyway. And to have all the, I'm going to use the word darkness of, you know, pain, it is pain. Also to, you know, like tragedy to either even the offender or the person that was the victim, if you want to use that word. So I think just energetically, having around that around me all the time, they said that probably wouldn't suit my, I think at the time too, I was very naive and very idealistic, and that we
bright-eyed,
could really
bushy-tailed young Simone who
That's
wants
right.
to help the world and save the animals and save the children, and all of them have seen some shit, and they're like, Simone,
yes.
You're gonna see some shit. And it's going to take away this glow in your eyes, and you're going to look like you're 60 when you're 40.
So
exactly.
Does the type of work of being a body worker, whether it's a massage therapist or a structural integrator or blah, 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 you're exposed to a lot of people, and therefore you've also seen some shit. Like, we've all seen some really bad shit on a massage table. At least we can say it from you and I on the chair here, from
can
a massage.
Can I offer you a perspective on how...
And so literally, I've actually seen shit.
Right? Like, I've had people on my table. They're coming for body work, for injury, as a result of domestic violence, mm-hmm. right? As a result of this, this, and that. That so you still see some shit.
Right. So I've had the same experience. I mean, I've got patients currently who have been stabbed, who have been incarcerated, who, you know, a lot of their injury is coming from very violent things. Mm-hmm. And I think the main difference here is if she wanted to be a criminal defense attorney, you are likely defending the person who stabbed the person versus helping the, you know, victim, if that's the word we're going with again, right? But I think that these lawyers were trying to say, like, you might be a little bit too bright-eyed and bushy-tailed for the darkness of this field. Maybe they were wrong, maybe they weren't, but I mean, it did help her to stumble into manual therapy. So that's
right, which is
such
as
the universe.
So I'm going to use kind of the analogy of Spock. Is that on the outside, I look very, you know, like, I guess like Spock, very, I am centered, but centered strong. I can really support and defend people, if you will, on all aspects of their life. But I am super sensitive. And I think they saw that sensitivity and that sensitivity, because it segues into my passion. So when I make my $1 billion, even before that, I'm going to create a not-for-profit organization because it is my passion. I want to create a kind of an sanctuary for animals and that to be rehabbed. And then I also want to do that to foster kids and have them go on my nutrition program and have them get the right counseling and all that sort of thing. So I want to do both of those. So it is, I am like always looking at that, but on the outside, yeah, I'm pretty tough. I've been through a lot of crap myself, but I am super sensitive and aware of people. So that segued into always finding a solution. And I would find a solution to for people in my career, but also too, like I've learned that oftentimes people in my personal life don't want that solution. So having to find that balance, because sometimes people just have to go through their own stuff and figure out their own solution.
Are animals better than people?
Are they better than people? They're different than people, but I have this analogy because I have faith in, and I believe in God, that I believe that they're directly connected to spirit and that they're here really to help and support humans really find kindness and compassion. And so I have a really deep, I guess, deep love for animals because they are really unconditionally there to support their owner or the human. And they help them also release, you know, oxytocin, serotonin, they help people with happiness. So are they better? I think they're more balanced in a sense. Humans can be out of balance because we have choice and free will. But generally, animals in nature are a bit more balanced in, you know, drinking water, eating food, also to playtime. And so they're also good role models for kids, but also for humans to do some self-care and chill.
Speaking of animals, I don't know if you know, Simone has famous pets.
What do you mean famous?
Like they're
like online, they've been
famous
in the movies?
Like celebrities follow her cats on Instagram. She has famous pets.
A lot of athletes follow them. They don't follow me, but they follow Snowy and Cinnamon.
Do you have a favorite animal?
You know, I like all good animals. Mm-hmm. So there isn't one I don't like. I like snakes, lizards, spiders. I've actually even captured flies in my house and let them outside. And so I'm like, everything has the opportunity to live.
Interesting.
I want to get back to.
Sorry,
I mean,
know.
No, I love this
every
stuff,
time we talk about animals. To be honest, the only thing I actually picture lately, I watched a video of a mongoose killing a cobra, and I was like, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my fucking life.
What?
Because a mongoose is immune to snake venom, So you'll just walk up to a cobra who's all in their pose, and the cobra's trying to bite you. Mongoose is like, fuck it, I'm just going to bite you in the head and take you into the bushes. It's actually really interesting to watch.
We'll get back to this, but anyway. I really got to know at some point what the hell, like, how the hell you stumble on a video of a mongoose fighting a cobra. But anyway.
You know what happens. You can't sleep and you end up on YouTube.
The things. Anyway. But yeah, funny that Simone has these professional athletes following her pets, because one thing I do know about Simone, and we're going to get there, is she has worked with professional athletes, because athletes see the value in her ability to connect fascia and concussion, and she has helped some like high level athletes actually get back to performing because she offers a type of treatment that we're not learning in school. So she's created her own systems. And I want to get to that because I want to figure out how you go from studying law and then you get in this accident, you meet this physiotherapist who's doing things very different than other physical therapists, I guess, and he starts to mentor you. So where do you go from there? Like, how did you, Simone, get your education and get the research that helped you to get onto this path where you are now? Because this is wildly different from what you were studying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I ended up finishing my pre-law. So I got that. So I have actually a degree in like neuropsych and also political science. So from that, once I graduated, so I went to school year round because going into the ADHD and overachiever, I did that. And then I was mentored by him. And then I started actually studying privately with physical therapists and some osteopaths from Europe. And then I went back to school. So the first, kind of like the first segue of that is I did take a orthopedic massage course. So that was really interesting. So I did that initially, and then I went back to school. So I went back in the United States and I started doing the sciences. So first I wanted to really get a deeper sense of biochemistry, organic chemistry, anatomy, physiology, because I thought, okay, so I'm either going to go into physical therapy or go and be a medical doctor. So it's like I wanted to achieve these goals. So I did a lot of sciences. I'm actually published in organic chemistry. I did a paper on Herudin, which is an anticoagulant that is heparin is based off of. So I did that. So I've been doing research. I was part of a cancer research study while I was at ASU. And so then I did physical therapy, the manual therapy courses. And so at that time, which is very interesting, because I've had 6 major head injuries as an adult, but that was the segue into going into the physical therapy, I continued to have major head injuries. And while I was in the application process to med school, I actually became deaf. So I was deaf for 2 years legally. And in the beginning, I thought, oh, this is super awesome. I don't have to listen to anybody. And that's, I think, the idealism of everything.
Wait.
I know, this is going too fast.
This is going way too fast for me, Simone.
I have so many questions all over the place.
I'm
going
to let you go first because I have so many questions too.
My first question is,
her face, by the way, looks like she knew that she was she was intentionally flying through like big things without even any explanation.
I don't know if my question is really based on a massive question mark from all that stuff. Uh-huh. But I always hear someone say, I studied with this person. I studied with this person. I did mentoring with, and I imagine that looks different for everybody. But someone that's listening to this is like a brand new massage therapist listening to this, is thinking, what the fuck do you mean you studied with that person? Like, what does that look like for you when you say, I studied with these physiotherapists, you know, privately with them?
And the osteos.
Like, what does that look like? What are you doing with them? How often are you getting together? What do these conversations or mentoring sessions, what does it look like?
So a lot of them, they look like internships. So that's a familiar word where you go and you kind of like follow them or like shadow them and then really have that conversation. So I spent like months or even like with the first physio receiving, again, the treatment and then having the discussion. But then I had to actually go and get the skills and the tool set to actually implement it. But that was then doing, before I actually went back to school, doing those, these, I guess, one-on-ones, you would call them, privately with people. Mm-hmm. And I offer that with people as well now, that if they want, I can shadow them in their clinic or they can come to me. And it's just really helping them to scale with their skill. Because I think that what's really important is that everyone can see what the teacher is teaching them, but it's the palpatory skills. Like, how sensitive can you get your fingers? And so for me, I think since I was born, I always had an affinity to fashion. I didn't know it. And then having the awareness come there. And it's the same as with lymphatics. So I had the opportunity, because I was in Arizona, Bruno Chickley was in Arizona. And I had the opportunity to get treated by him. And when he was treating me, he said, oh, you must be one of my advanced students. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And so then that opened up a segue too of really going, okay, some people have an innate ability. And I had really a calling to fascia and lymphatics. And so when I just touch someone, and it's funny, if I touch someone, I can actually put them to sleep because I can engage their lymph right away. And I had no idea I had these abilities. And so I think just really the more I studied science, the more I understood that science and really spirituality or intuition grew, and it grew exponentially for me. So the more I studied, the more I guess my connection to those two systems just exploded.
Great. I have 28,000 more questions.
Well, let's start with the first 28,000.
Let's start with the first. So I first want to mention, because when we started, you know, at the top of the episode, I said we've invited you to be one of the presenters in Calgary, because that's currently where you are. But since you did bring up the states, I want to be clear on your background, because I think you're kind of back and forth, right? Are you American? Are you Canadian? Where did you do majority of your education and training? Was it here or in the U.S.?
So it's kind of like how I am. So my parents, both of them are American and Canadian, so they're hybrids. And so that's opened up a lot of opportunity for me. And also, so I have family in the U.S., I have family in Canada. I did the pre-law in Canada.
Okay.
And then I went to the U.S. and did all of the mentoring and the physical therapy, the manual therapy, and the science there. So it's kind of split even.
So now I have another question. As you're talking and I'm hearing, like, you didn't traditionally do what most people do when they decide they wanted to get into manual therapy. Most people will say, like, okay, either I'm going to go to university and I'm going to get my degree in physical therapy, or I'm going to go to university and then I'm going to go get a go to chiropractic college, or I'm going to go to massage therapy college, or I'm going to find a school of osteopathy. Mm-hmm. You said, I'm going to go find practitioners, follow them around, and in the meantime, take science courses, understand foundational science, and then take some manual therapy courses, but not actually get a manual therapy degree. I'm just going to take all this education everywhere. Why? Like, why was that your, was it that you didn't quite know the path you wanted to take? Do you like innately feel this gave you a broader understanding? Do you suggest this to people? Like, this just seems like you wanted to learn.
It's a very unconventional
route. It's very unconventional. You wanted to learn everything. And I find it fascinating how you took all of these things. You're like, I studied organic chemistry while also mentoring with this physical therapist. And then I was with this osteo taking manual therapy. Like, you're all over the place. Why did you decide to do that?
And did you realize you were all over the place when you were all over the place?
So for me, I'm not all over the place.
See?
I'm just where I am, and I'm very present with that. And there is a plan, but the plan was bigger than me. So I am unconventional in the sense that I've always mentally been a pioneer, I think, outside the box. You know, like I met with, so this is just going to be a segue. I met with investors in like 2006 because I wanted to create a vitamin patch that you could put on, just like, you know, an estrogen patch and all that sort of thing. And so I'm like always thinking about how can we deliver things in a more straightforward way, simplify. So I'm like always kind of creating. Mm-hmm. certain things. And so what happened is they did the research because they were just, I go, just buy the idea off me and I can do the formula Z, because really the mechanism's already been created. And so like, oh, that's super awesome. And so they went and did the research, but Spectrum had a prototype, Spectrum Health supplements. They've never implemented it. So these guys said, if your brand gets big enough, they go, we'll revisit this because it's something that needs to be out there. But Spectrum is holding on to a prototype, but did not trademark it. So that's kind of how my brain is. I'm actually a tech geek. I was downloading music when it wasn't popular. I was one of the first users of satellite, like Sirius satellite radio, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I was driving across the desert because I was in the desert at the time. And so I called the guy. I'm like, it doesn't work. The guys who created it, I go, it doesn't work. I want it to drive across the desert and there's no radio station. And they go, we're not there yet. So even with computer programs, I'm like, I need this. And the computer guys are, we're not there yet. So I'm always like thinking forward. And I think part of it is I live my life backwards in many ways. So that's going, okay, I had the injuries. I had the concussions. I have ADHD, which is leading to the very creative part, but ADHD and concussions not optimal, makes your brain like lose all the strategies. But so I'm like, okay, there isn't a solution for that. There wasn't a solution for what was going on with me. And so then I just go and find the solution and create it. And so there is kind of a system, but when I developed first in like 1999, long time ago, the fascia stuff, nobody had heard about fascia. So I was actually, I've had the opportunity to talk to like the founder of Genentech, PhDs, MDs, because they're like, what is this fascia stuff? And this was way back then. And I'm like, well, this is actually the mechanism. This is how it works. And what was really cool is these guys all had some sort of injury. And I would work with them and like, oh my gosh, I have no idea what this is. It's esoteric, but it works. So this was before fascia became fashionable. So I was a pioneer in doing that work. But back then I was asked to teach it. And because of my concussion, now looking back, I was unable and the market really wasn't there. So people weren't ready to learn it yet. And I wasn't really ready to teach it, in the sense of being pretty, very precise. So fast forwarding to my courses now, my practitioners, when they, to get their certificate, they have to do 2 case studies. And we do, we look at the symptom inventory. Does it change? Does this work? And it also shows, wow, can I teach this to other people? And so in 2 treatments in their case studies, people are improving 30 to 60%. And this is from brand new practitioners are getting that result with my concussion treatment therapy that I'm teaching them that's fascially based. And it's like, oh, okay, one, I'm a good teacher because these people are doing it. And I'm collecting the data and the research to do that. So it's like, yes, I've lived my life backwards. I'm talking to PhDs and they're like, do you know you just ran a 5-year clinical trial? I'm like, oh, is that what it's called? And I'm like, and so I did a 5-year clinical trial, didn't know that. And I've got all the data. It's going to be published. I'm doing the case study publication. So it's like, they told me, they go, you're doing the job of the journal that is going to publicize your work. And I think I've just always go, okay, there's something that needs to be done. I do it. And I create a solution really to any problem. But it started off with me and like the going deaf and really having no memory. I didn't know right from left.
Can I ask you about the going deaf? Because that was one of my 28,000 questions.
Oh, okay.
You kind of blew by that. How does that happen? Like, do you just wake up one day and you're deaf? Was this because of the accident? Was there something else? And how do you get your hearing back? Or did it just magically appear one day as quickly as it left you?
Okay. So I did not realize that from the accident that I had like in 99 or 2000, I was starting to lose my hearing, but I didn't realize like my brain was adapting. And then in 2003, I did wake up and my pillow was soaking wet. And then I fell over. And so I went to Scottsdale Emergency, and basically, yeah, I'd lost my hearing, and I lost 100% in my right ear, and I had maybe 20% in my left. And that was from the head injury. So I went and saw some ENT specialists. They thought, well, there's two reasons. One is the accident, or two, you have a tumor. So I went and got an MRI, and I didn't have a tumor. So they said it's from the trauma. The trauma damaged my nerve. And so the physical part of my ear, everything is perfect. So people are like, oh, why don't you do a hearing aid? Well, I can't, because it's actually the nerve that's damaged.
It's nerve damage.
And so again, like I was like, how do I really work around that? So again, I think that idealism comes in, and I always take a spin of everything's positive. And like I did say to my friend, you know, like, oh, I don't have to listen to people now.
That was where my next question went, because I can guarantee you, Simone, majority of the people listening to us right now, and me included, and I know Mark's got to be with me on this. If I woke up and my pillow is soaked and I stand up and I fall over, I'm not like, great, I don't have to listen to anyone. I'm scared shitless. I can't hear now. I'm terrified. I'm thinking like everything in my life is going to change. I'm going to have to adapt to this new way of living where I no longer have one of my senses. And I know this happens to people, and I know, you know, you figure it out. Humans are resourceful. You carry on. But to have this thought when you just lose your hearing of like, well, now I don't have to listen to anybody. I don't know anybody who would think that way. So how are you so idealistic in that moment and not like shitting your pants that you can no longer hear?
It's just the way my brain is wired. I didn't think that it would be an ongoing issue. I thought it could be healed. I thought it'd be, you know, like maybe some temporary thing. So I think, yeah, I didn't realize like how it could impact me. So I was just like, okay, well, I'll go and see how we can resolve this. Go to the hospital. You know, they put me on prednisone. I didn't take it for a week because I was like, oh, that stuff's really bad. But I started to take it because I had so much inflammation in my head. Mm-hmm. And that was possibly what they're saying that could be causing it from the trauma. So, you know, I reached out to some medical doctors. And again, what's interesting is I continued to work with people. I did continue to go to school. And I became an expert at reading lips in a very short period of time. And yeah, I think I just carried on. I didn't think that it was going to last. And so when it actually wasn't getting better, and then it segued into, I was starting to get a lot of neurological pain. And so the pain, the migraines would get bigger. So I'd actually have like 3 or 4 migraines a week, and then I'd have a hangover. So there would be like maybe 2 days out of a month that I actually had clarity in my head. So I was in Arizona at the time, and I was like, okay, it must be to like the pollution, the dust, the dirt. So I was actually doing like antihistamines, and that would help clear it up so that I could actually, my brain would be good, but it wouldn't help with the neurological pain. And so I was volunteering at Mayo in the sleep apnea or the sleep disorder center. And so we just watch people sleep and you know, really look at that. So it was like, I was just there by myself. So again, I didn't really have to hear, I was just looking at data, but I was leaving and the whole left side of my body went numb, like at the dentist numb. So I was like, oh, if that goes close to my heart, I might like have a heart attack. And so it was like just going through the whole side of my left, and I was driving to go to school. And in the US, like 20% of your grade is really based on attendance. So I'm like, I have to go. And then I got in my car, started to drive. And I'm like, you know what? You actually really need to go to Emerge. So I went into emergency and they tested me, of course, for a heart attack, but they're like, you're too young for that. And so then I went to a neurologist and he said, well, actually that's like a whole body migraine. And he goes, but for you, it goes to both sides. And he goes, it's really unusual, which is part of like who I am. I get all these unusual things. And So he's like, well, you really don't want to do medication, which I didn't want to. So he just told me to, he was really smart. He goes, just do high Bs and high magnesium. So that was his solution. But still, I was having a lot of pain. And in 2007, I had read, like, this couple gave me this book on this nun who heals people through prayer. So all these things are kind of coming together.
The scientist is now going to see the nun who heals the people through prayer. This is like the most wild episode I think I've heard. Like now we're praying us better. Okay. So you go to the nun.
So the nun's in Florida. So I go to Florida. And this is the really crazy thing too. So she heals people through prayer and it's free. So you go to this retreat, it's free. And I'm like, what? And so I go, and it just so happens that it's spring training. So my friends that are with the Boston Red Sox are there. So I get to go watch baseball, get healed by a nun. But actually, I didn't go to get healed. The only way I would go is to find out how she was doing it. So that's how my brain works. I wasn't going to heal myself. I actually was like, oh my gosh, I want to learn what she does. And so I go there, and on the first, like, you know, and she's out, like, you know, by the pool in her bathing suit and whatever. And then she comes in, and I'm like the youngest person there, and everyone there is like, has major cancers and like debilitating diseases. So I can hear with the 20%. So I am listening. I am also lip reading. So they're calling people up and to get healed by her. So what she does is she just prays, and the priest anoints you with oil. And so I'd never seen that before, but it was like pretty amazing. And so finally they said at the end, you know, if you suffer migraines, I'm like, oh, that's me. So I run up, and, you know, she prays over me and anoints me with oil. And by the time I got back to my seat, I was actually pain-free. I was like, I have no pain in my body, and I had a lot of pain. And so what I took away from reading her book, and then actually even talking to her, because I talked to her after, because I'm like, what do you pray? I want to know what you pray so I can do it too. And she's like, she's Irish. And in her Irish accent, she's like, it's not like I have a rote prayer. You know, it's just like I'm sitting next to Jesus and I just pray. And I'm like, well, okay. There was no solution. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do that.
So when you walked back to your seat and you're pain-free, are mm-hmm. you like, are you skeptical? Are you just like, cool, this is awesome?
She's cool. This is awesome. She doesn't process this stuff the way we process it.
I'm starting to see that.
What the fuck's going on here? Right? Like for me, first of all, like I never, and I don't know many people that do, that find someone that does something that they might be of interest in and say, I want to go learn how you do that. Like I say this all the time. I know some mixologists. They make some really good damn drinks. I'm like, I don't want to know how to do that. I don't fucking care. You know, there's a guy that fixes my transmission. I'm like, I don't want to know how to fucking do that. That's why I come to you guys. I don't need to know all this kind of shit. So to me, that's already fascinating that you're already like, that everything that comes your way, you're like, I want to know how to do that. I want to be able to do that. I'm like, I don't want to be able to do any of this shit. I just want to know. I want to know the people that do it so I can refer people if I ever need to refer someone. I don't need to know how to do it myself. That's just me.
So
anyway.
Major literally goes all the way down to Florida to meet a nun who heals people with prayer.
Doing any of this stuff, at any point in time, are you looking for this is all bullshit, or are you going there purely open-minded, purely optimistic, actually have a genuine interest in learning, or is any part of it just to cast stones a little bit? Because I imagine, at least for me, would be, I want to see what this is all about so I can fucking say how shitty it is.
That actually never enters my mind in my entire life.
Better person.
And that's why I think those lawyers saw that and said I was really too idealistic. And it's really for real. And so here's the thing too. So I went and I wrote a story. So I wrote a blog about my experience with her. And I sent it to her, and I also sent it to a few priests, And so I sent it to her, and she said, she sent it back. She sent me a message back saying, you know what? I will add you to my prayer list forever. And I was like, oh yes, I need all the extra help I can get. Absolutely. I accept.
I'm in.
And so this is going to be a really interesting segue here. So because of my uniqueness, I had this lady who invited me because her husband was very involved in the Catholic Church. And every once a year, he has a golf tournament for all the priests in Wyoming. All the priests, the bishops, and all that sort of stuff. And she goes, will you come up to Wyoming and just hang out with me for the weekend? Because she goes, I don't want to be the only female. And she goes, and plus two, you could talk to all these priests and stuff. I'm like, okay. So I go, and you know, they've golfed all day. They've had beers. They're like super awesome and really, really funny. And they start, you know, like I start having a conversation about like six priests. And I start talking about, her name's Breege McKenna, the nun that heals. And she's actually, I think, going to be canonized as a saint because you only need to do one miracle. And she's actually done so many. It's super cool. And so I start talking about my experience. And this one priest says, well, I don't believe in what she can do. And like he's an older priest. And I said, well, where's your faith? And he's like, well, I believe in God. And I said, well, actually, you don't. This is challenging your faith because you're saying that God doesn't have the ability to give people healing capabilities. And I said, that is actually, you're saying that God can't do that. So your faith is actually not what you think it is.
Why did he say that I don't believe in what she claims she can do? Like, so, what was his words? For that
explanation. Said, I don't believe in that. And what's that was, and so when you become, so this is my take on this. When you become a minister of faith, you know, or really saying that God is God, then all things are possible. And God has the ability, or Spirit has the ability, to give people capabilities that are supernatural. So that goes into like the Marvel characters, and you can see it on Star Trek that, you know, people have super extra capabilities, like mind reading, to healing, to whatever. And so that was my thing. Like, if you're working for God, like, you have to believe that God has the power and the capability to heal anybody instantly. And so we're having that conversation, and the bishop actually came over because he heard me talking about this. And he said, actually, I do know about Breege McKenna. And yes, it's proven that she is doing healing. And because what I learned after is that in the church, they don't really like people to be called healers. So with her, she had to jump through a whole bunch of hoops to actually even do that. She didn't even want to be one. So it was just something that happened to her too. She healed herself of rheumatoid arthritis at 15 years old. And at 15, she wanted to be a nun. And so they didn't allow that. But she said, she was kind of like me and her Irish thing. She's like, I'm doing it. So she just went to the church and they accepted her at 15 years old. And so that's kind of like my attitude too, is if you want something, you go to the top and you learn from the person at the top. And I've done that through everything. And even like, I'm going to use that example of, you know, what happened in 2020 to 2022. I actually reached out to the head of every institution, including the CDC, to the head of the president of the United States, to the prime minister of Canada. And so I was like, talking to the top. And what's really cool is that for 99% of the time, people responded back to me. So I don't know, that's kind of an energy around me, like just like with the satellite guys, I reach out to them, you know, like to the computer guys, and like, this computer program doesn't do that yet. And it's like, you know, I think that helps everybody grow. But I like to find out from the person who actually can make a decision, like, is this happening? And even too, like when people weren't allowed to go over the border And I was able to go back and forth because of the research that I was doing actually helped with mental health. And so the government of both countries gave me exemption, and which was super powerful. And it's like, I think always looking at a solution and going different has been a blessing, but it also opens doors.
Simone's idealism is like, it's like you on steroids. You know how like you're the guy,
nothing like that.
But I just mean, you're the guy that has a billion ideas. You always have ideas. You see holes in things and you have ideas about everything.
I'm not this.
But you also have this attitude of like, anything's possible. There is a solution, and you hate when there's red tape to solutions. All she's doing is saying, I'm going to go get the solution myself. I'm just going to go to the head people of wherever I need to go and figure it out. Is there ever times where people are like, listen, lady, like you can't just power through and do whatever the hell you want and talk to whoever you want? Like, do you ever get people saying like, no, who are you? Stop right there.
I think when that happens, because as it happens, so it's yes. All like fluid. It's fluid. So I just find another opportunity. And it's like, or just sit with it and go, what is that resistance? And oftentimes either people aren't ready for a change, because change is really difficult. Or I find where that hesitation comes from is when people are afraid.
I don't know.
And they're, you know, just afraid of change. And so again, I have compassion with that, but I'm like, I look for another door immediately. It's like, okay, that one's shut. And then I go and look for another one. But the hardest part for me is like, I am very blessed with having those opportunities. But it's like, where I find sometimes now is that when working with people who've been in so much pain for so long, they're the ones that are blocking the change. And it's like not the people that can actually make the difference. They're like, yeah, that's super awesome. But I think one-on-one, when people have been really in pain for too long, or they've seen everybody who has promised to help them, they're the ones that actually stop the opportunity. And that's the hardest one to go through, is when you actually have a solution for someone and they've been disappointed so many times, they block it themselves. So that's where I struggle the most with. It's not actually the owners of the teams or the presidents or whatever. It's like, it seems like they're actually always looking for a solution too and have an open mind. And it may not look like it publicly, but behind the scenes, there's a lot of those higher ups that are already interested in. And people in science, which is very cool, and like even Spock too, is that there is a creator, because the true science, which is physics, proves that there is a creator, like the universe is moving away from one focal point. And what's really cool about the universe and what nature is always expanding, and then that expansion is growth, and that growth is change and always doing something new. But if we stop that growth, that is actually against nature. And some people who are in a lot of pain, or like they're just so stuck in thinking one way that it isn't possible, they actually start to believe that. And so they can't see a solution. And that's the tragedy. And that's what impacts me the most, is I want to reach those people.
Just one thought, and I'll leave it there. And no comments need to be made on my one thought. I just want to get it off before I forget. I don't fully buy anytime anyone tells me that the resistance to change is coming because I'm not ready for it or because I'm scared of it. I have fear of it. Those may be factors for some people in some scenarios, but sometimes the factor is the solution is full of shit. And it's not that I'm fearful of this proposed solution or I'm not ready for this proposed solution. Sometimes in my mind, the solution is just full of shit and therefore I just dismiss it. This is more than once that has kind of come up where I hear that kind of logic. Well, this person's resistance to change because they're fearful of it or they're not ready for it. Maybe I am ready for change and that solution is just not the thing that is going to bring the change or whatever the case is. that's just my quick thought.
No. I appreciate that, because that opens up a huge door, because that goes into actually the limbic brain, the reptilian brain, and the brain in general. The brain, the unconscious mind, which controls our body and mostly everything that's going on, usually takes the path of least resistance.
Yes. Sits in the comfort zone.
Brain actually doesn't like change in any way, positive or negative. So we have that underlying thing going on anyway. But here's what happens when we're deficient in any resources. So this goes into the neurotransmitter research that I've been doing. If we're deficient in any neurotransmitters, that affects how we communicate to the world. So after the 6 years of studying also ADHD brain, the ADHD brain actually can see things the opposite of what's being presented. So sometimes with that, our brain can interfere in processing what is actually the next step. So which actually could keep people stuck. So it's quite simply, it goes back into the brain, neurotransmitters, that change is super hard.
Yes.
And so that is true. And you're right. Some solutions aren't the right solution, and they might not be the solution. So I totally present that and accept that 100%. Because what I'm finding, and this is what I say all the time with the medical profession or people in authority or even just the general public, is people simply sometimes don't know what they don't know. And my passion is just to bring awareness so that you can have a choice. If you have choice, you have freedom. And you could choose to do that solution. And you're right, it might suck. And I agree that there's a lot of stuff out there. There's a lot of noise out there. And that's why, like, the people that I'm seeing are so devastated, because they've been promised a solution and it's failed them. So I go back, what I've created is just super simple. Simplicity is actually the answer, but humans like complexity, because then it sounds like it's more valuable. And I guess that's the difference between animals and humans, is animals keep it simple. Humans make things complex. And that actually creates, when it's too complex, people don't do it. Because again, we go back to the brain. The brain doesn't like change, but we do have that innate ability to go, is this full of shit or not? But when the meter is broken, which mine was broken with my head injuries, and I was so deficient in neurotransmitters, and that's why I created the program, I honestly didn't, and you can see also too with my idealism, that it's just like I'm open to every opportunity, because I want to find out if it sucks myself. If somebody else says that's the shittiest thing in the world, I'm like, well, I want to find it out. And so here's me. I go and I listen to people who are extreme right, extreme left, because I want to meet them so that I can have an opinion on what they're saying. And that's just the way I call myself too, I guess, Switzerland. I like to sit in the middle, but I'm not in the middle, but I like to sit in a place that's neutral so I can get that information, because I simply don't know what their platform is. And I may not like them. And I can say that, you know, I've met a few prime ministers of Canada, one in particular, that when I met him, you know, he was going around shaking everyone's hand, and I stepped back. I didn't even want to touch him. The guy was so slimy. So I wanted to actually have that experience in the sense to go, okay, yeah, now I get why there's dislike there, because the guy wasn't authentic and he's a liar and he's disgusting energetically. But if I had not had the experience to sit and listen to him for 2 hours to go, okay, is he the real deal or not? So I that's why I like to go and do that, is because I want to actually form my own opinion. And then I go, yeah, that's not for me, or that solution is definitely not for me. So I get what you're saying 100% is true.
So I just want to go back to like sort of button this piece up. Once you did all of your like private studying, you took courses, how did you actually then go on to create your program and become a practitioner yourself, and then ultimately end up where you are now, where you are teaching courses and educating everybody else to learn a little bit more about fascia and about lymph and about concussions and brain health and all these things you're doing to try to improve people's practices?
So when you learn outside the box, you could go and challenge tests. So you can challenge tests and you can get actually certifications. And so that's what I did. So right now with my my energy that's going out there to the world is my 6-year study. I hope to turn into a PhD program, because really I've done all the work. And so I'm talking to a few institutions that are interested in doing that. So you can actually learn backwards also. So like I live my life backwards. I'm like, okay, here's what I want. I'm just going to do that and then kind of get all the education after. And I don't recommend that. It's really it's not easy. It's definitely, I don't recommend that, but it's there. So I've actually also helped other people. I'm like, go challenge the test. Go challenge the test, go get in, and you can do that. There is opportunity in universities to do that.
Okay, so you got your education unconventionally. And then what patients do you see? Who are the people that come to you for help? Like, I know you do a lot of teaching these days, but I assume you're still practicing as well. Who do you help?
So who I help? People who have a lot of fascial restriction. And so those people usually generally have chronic pain. But my passion is really working with kids who have ADHD and concussion head injury. So their parents actually bring them in. And so that is really the major part of my business, is working with them. So doing my dynamic brain healing, the concussion work, and then also to doing the nutrition piece with them. And but I see people who are 100 years old. I see people who, as you know, young as, you know, really generally now 7 or 8. The little kids I really refer out. That's not my specialty, although I can, but it's not my specialty. But really people who've seen pretty much everyone else. And then they come. So I've had people fly in from England to people from the US, like when I'm in the US or, you know, whatever, and come for the treatment. So I've been very, I guess, blessed that way, that people find, they keep looking until they find a solution. So those are type of people that I see. And if you have just a general, oh, my back's sore, oh, my shoulder's hurt, or oh, my insurance is running out, those aren't the people I see, because I don't do insurance work. It's all cash-based business. So yeah, it's just really people who want to get out of pain and who want their brains back.
And how do you see yourself, you know, now that we have, you know, we had you at our last conference, you know, you had a booth to kind of promote mm-hmm. yourself and what you do. You did a demo there. Now that you've been to one of our conferences, you're going to be at the conference in Calgary. How do you see what you do helping RMTs and making sure that they are still staying within their scope of practice? Because some of the things you do obviously fall outside of the scope of what we can do. But what parts of your business are going to be helpful to us?
So before you answer that, I also want to stress the idea of like learning stuff, because we get this all the time.
Oh, yes.
Where it's like, well, why do you put this on your platform? This is out of the scope of practice for blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah,
listen,
blah.
The way we operate is not like this. Your education stays within the confines of scope of practice. Like, feel free to learn whatever the fuck you want to learn.
Exactly.
And it doesn't mean that you're taking everything you learn and finding a way to throw it into your treatments and working with your patients and clients. Like, you learn shit that you feel interested in, and therefore we don't feel the need to put a cap on what you might be interested in and then us displaying that to you.
Yep.
I just really want to get that.
I'm actually really glad you brought that up, because we had at our last two conferences, we've had people who are not manual therapists at all.
Yeah.
At this past one, we had a holistic nutritionist. Yep. And we had somebody who also did something within nutrition and live blood analysis mm-hmm. the year before. And I was getting those questions.
Like,
and
why is this person here?
And this is why, you know, this is kind of why I asked Simone, like, how, you know, how massage therapists would relate to her. I mean, I can see it, because she's a little more with fascia and lymph and
right,
whatever.
Right.
Also, the reason we bring in people like Simone or like Jennifer, who came to our last conference, or like, what's her name? Susan, who came to the one before, mm-hmm. is because, as Mark said,
Susan,
because we are working with people. And as massage therapists, we spend so much time with these people, and these people tell us everything, and they want our advice on every aspect of their health and well-being, whether it's within our scope or not. I'm not saying give people advice regarding their mental health or their nutrition or whatever, but it does make a lot of sense to have an understanding, because that's when you start to pick up on things when you should either refer out, or maybe you want to go get more education and training. And so I'm glad that you brought that up, because just because Simone does a lot of stuff that's outside of our scope of practice, what she's doing
doesn't mean we're going to restrict the RMT from gathering information.
Exactly. But yes, for those who are curious, Simone, how are you finding your work to be beneficial to our community?
Well, that is a great question, because massage people do spend a lot of time, and they're a great referral source. So with the Brain Nutrition Program, because I'm learning through doing, realized that I just turned it into a referral affiliate program, that people just refer to me. It's all getting automated and all that sort of thing. So that's out of their scope of practice, but it's like, hey, this might be benefit. Try it out. Here's the link. So there's that. I also, too, all my courses have continuing ed credits. So the associations have accepted them, which is super awesome. And what we did is just change some of the languaging. So instead of the dynamic brain healing, it's like fascial release of the cranium and upper cervical spine. And because then it's within the scope of that, because we're really directly influencing the fascia on the cervical spine and the cranium. So that fascial attachments actually attaches to the brain directly. And in that, it's kind of looking at that, but they don't have to really do a deep dive into that. I also, too, I'm always there to support my practitioners that do the course. So if they have a question or whatnot, I'm always there to answer. And I think when you do continuing ed credits, a lot of the people take my courses. They've already maxed out their CEUs or CECs, whatever designation they are. And they're like, I just want to take your course because it is next level. So it's like very precise and very a deep dive into fascia and how it influences pain and movement. So it's super cool. But the CECs, the associations, I work with all of them to kind of come up with the languaging that works. So that's within the scope of practice. And what's out of it, because massage therapy people have so much power in referring, that people come to you more than the medical doctor, that knowing what is out there is of great benefit to your client. That, there's this resource. Like, I refer out to so many different things because it takes a team to help people heal. And you want to have a great team together that kind of like can take your person to the next level and basically live a pain-free life, like I'm pretty much doing myself now. And all the practitioners I've seen, and they're like, well, we can't believe you're even walking. And so I do believe it's possible with the right approach and right technique, and it takes a team. So every modality has its place. And when I'm looking at these people and when I'm teaching my practitioners, is that there's a hierarchy to healing. So sometimes it can be the best modality, but just not right now. So then once you do this fascial release stuff, then they can actually go into other modalities, because if the nervous system is too excited, then most treatments won't work, even if they're the best in the world. So I kind of teach all that, and people really love it. And in the courses, what the practitioners are saying is that it's not only transformed them personally, but now they can use it on Monday. If it finishes Sunday, they can use it Monday right away. And most of the practitioners are saying that they're transferring to really doing a lot of that work, because they find it, they're always switched on. It's like they always are a detective what the person has to do, because we do a fascial assessment and then we do symptom inventory, then we do the treatment, and then there's feedback, and it's always interactive with the person. So your client actually starts to see you, wow, you are an expert. You know what you're doing. We're always doing measurements, always doing the, you know, seeing the change. And so, yeah, it's just super rewarding.
Well, if anyone is interested in learning from Simone, she is going to be at the Canadian Massage Conference in Calgary. It's a 3-day event, June 7th to 9th. On the 7th, she'll be doing some interactive demos so you can actually see her in action. On the 8th and 9th, she's going to be teaching 1 and 2 hour classes to give a bit of an introduction to some of the work she does with fascia and the effects on the brain and concussions. But for anyone listening, Simone, that they want to learn a little more about you or get in touch with you or pick your brain a little or maybe take some training with you, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me at the fasciatraininginstitute.com or simoneforte.com. And always info@simoneforte.com.
Really cool.
Yeah, I'm on also Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook. I'm all over the internet, and it's Fascia Train Institute and or Simone Forte.
We can find you everywhere.
Nice.
Do you have any more questions for Simone?
No, I like it. She's a little crazy. She's a little bit of a crackpot, but I like what you have to, I like what you have to say.
She's Spock.
I dig it, man. Unapologetic, and that's the way it is. This is me, world. Fucking deal with it.
I'm just going to go talk to the leaders everywhere and do what I got to do.
You know?
I think this is going to be really...
Why not?
Why not? Exactly. But I think this is going to be really interesting for the massage therapists that attend our next conference, because we are starting to bring, I mean, we always have, but we're really bringing in new presenters that are a little bit unconventional, a little bit out of the box, because as Mark said, we want to display everything.
Nothing's wrong with that, because
we want variety.
There's the balance, right? There's the balance. On the other side, we have all of the other stuff that you normally see at conferences and the presenters and qualifications and certificates, all that other shit. So I'm not saying that yours is like the polar opposite. It's not at all, but nonetheless, there's nothing wrong with learning shit.
Yep.
Right? And if it's not your deal, then you don't have to.
Yeah.
But we like to make it available for someone that does.
Yeah. Well, Simone, thank you so much for hanging out with us today and letting us get a little bit of an understanding of how you became the founder of this Fascial Training Institute and doing all the stuff you're doing. I definitely did not expect that you started out in law, but... That's the beautiful thing about this. We get to learn everybody's stories, and people do some interesting things, I tell you. This is the best part of my job, is talking to people and saying, what? I think I do that at least like 17 times a day, and I'm like, what? You did what? I'm realizing
now. Well, thank you both. You guys are so awesome, and I really appreciate, you know, what you're doing and bringing out this really to the world. And, you know, like, things that aren't mainstream, and then sometimes things that are. Yeah, I really appreciate you.
Right. Thanks. On. You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. Peace.